I have a little throat problem, so if you don't hear me, just make me understand. I will try to speak better. So I will talk about loops and inflation. This is a work we did with Mattia Zellariaga recently, one in completion. I will introduce by saying why we think completed loop correction to inflation observable is important. I will then talk about the UV divergences, and then about the AR divergences, both for the spectator fields. They divide themselves for spectator fields and for the inflator. So, but first of all, why is important why is relevant to complete loop correction to inflation observable? Because naively, at first, you would say, who cares? Because if you take a standard Sdrolli inflaton theory, the three-level density, scala field fluctuation, the two-point function is a square over k cube. This induces curvature perturbation of this size, which tell us, since this we measure to be 10 to the minus 10, and epsilon is less than 1, this tells us how HFM Planck is, which is less than 10 to the minus 5. And this means that when you compute loop correction to quantum observable here, you're dominated by the gravitational interactions, and they're down by 10 to the minus 10 with respect to the three-level result. So clearly, nobody should bother about computing this. In fact, this was the attitude for the first 25 years or so since the beginning of inflation. However, two things have emerged recently. One is that we found much more interacting theories than the one from standard Sdrolli inflation, the one which give large non-Gaussianities, and in principle, loops can be more important. Constraints on the non-Gaussianity limit this effect to be still kind of irrelevant. Another reason why to care is because Wander cared, and so we care. But Wander motivation was good. He just said, in this remarkable paper, that he said, well, if inflation seems to be the true theory of the universe, we better understand in full if we better have full understanding of his prediction. In particular, these fluctuations are of quantum origin. Let's compute the one loop quantum correction, this, and list everything. Let's look that everything is fine. I will add another motivation, which is that the Sitter space is a very puzzling space. It's a very puzzling space-time. We have an entropy, but it's hard to understand properly what it means. My inflation is a natural regularization of the Sitter space, and so maybe by doing calculation inflation, we can learn something about the Sitter. In fact, if I elaborate a little more on this, it's possible actually to show that. I would like to see how you can learn about the Sitter space from studying inflation. And you do this by studying Sdrolli-Eternal inflation. That is, the two-point function in Fourier space of the inflaton scales like this. This means that the two-point function coincidence, once you carry on the integral, grows linearly in time. This means that the inflaton, the fluctuation, undergo a random walk around the classical motion. And just by using this information, you're able to prove that Eternal inflation indeed happens. If you take a box of inflaton with the inflaton up in the potential and let it expand, each point in space will undergo inflation, and inflation will end when phi reaches phi reheating. And you will have a volume associated to this surface. The surface is not equal time because of the small quantum fluctuation which enhance or decrease the duration of inflation. As you make the potential flatter and flatter, the random walk component becomes more and more important, and the surface where phi is equal to phi reheating becomes more and more curved, more and more strange. In fact, you can begin to study the probability distribution of this surface, and you can prove that for a sharp value of this parameter, with the pi's and everything, when this parameter becomes less than 1, then the probability to create from a finite volume an infinite volume passing from the strict equal to 0 to not equal to 0. This is really the definition of Eternal inflation. This is really telling you that you start with something finite, you get something infinite out. And I would like to stress that this is a really beautiful thing, because these quantum effects here are changing the space-time, the asymptotic space-time of the universe. And like for the black hole, from this, the other example known, I think, is the black hole with evaporation, and how, as we were able to learn a lot with the Sitter entropy from the black hole, this is very similar. Maybe there is still something to learn. In fact, if you do some little work, more work, you find that you can learn about the Sitter entropy. In fact, still with this machinery I was mentioning, you can show that the probability to have a finite volume bigger than e to the s Sitter over 2 is strictly non-perturbative in M Planck. That is, you cannot create every finite volume you want. It's always smaller than this quantity here. And this is, for example, is a consistency check of the holographic interpretation of the Sitter space. It had to be this if you wanted to have the de Sitter entropy. So all these results about eternal inflation fail if you compute the one-loop correction and you find that there is a log k or a log of AOT, because this means that the two-point function coincident goes like t square, and you lose eternal inflation, and you lose the logarithmic test of the de Sitter space. Yes, which is, yes, exactly. This is no, it's a value this, which is a gauge invariant quantity, very well, yes. It was hard to find the gauge invariant quantity in eternal inflation. That is. So there is another reason why it is worth to study loops in inflation, which is the predictivity of inflation. That is, when we study perturbation inflation, we fundamentally rely on the fact that when the curve to perturbation is outside of the horizon, it doesn't evolve anymore. Because the modes outside the horizon cannot be affected by the local physics, which happens on Hubble scale. If this fails, we lose the predictivity of inflation, because in the time from horizon crossing to horizon re-entering, there are many, many, many epochs during which we don't know what happens on short scale. Gaffes, assisio, reheating, baryogenesis. We don't know what's going on there. It's very important that the curve of perturbation produced by inflation is not affected by that. If it is time dependent, we need to know all the histories, we lose predictivity. And what we study here, this h squared of n plus squared is 10 to minus 10, so it's a very weakly coupled version. Even if this was there, it wouldn't be not much important numerically. But this is a weakly coupled version of something which happened during reheating, and baryogenesis, and that can really change by order one the amplitude, the power spectrum, and the scale invariance. So let's start to study loop inflation. And there is a result by Weinberg, who studied for the first time this loop correction, and he found, unfortunately, a result which has a log k over mu, the normalization scale. Okay, this is the kind of bad result we didn't want, because if you take this result, you have troubles from eternal inflation, you have troubles again for the predictivity of inflation. So all the things I was saying before failed if this is the correct result. These are ultraviolet divergences, and it looks like it is for log k over mu. However, this result is clearly, it's immediate to see that it's wrong. Because if you think in a more sophisticated language, you could say that there is a zero momentum gauge invariance of the theory, which just means that if you rescale by constant the scale factor, and you rescale the coordinates by the same inverse scale factor, or if you scale the moving momenta by this quantity, the result should be invariant. And this is not invariant. So clearly this result was wrong. And how to find a mistake? So in order to find a mistake, yes, you're right. This is really not a physical. Yeah, you see, the point is that is really not a ratio of physical scales. So, in fact, it is anomalous, and it will be the result will be log of energy, log of age over mu. So, it. But the fact that we are looking at physical scales is not anomalous. It's okay. So how do you fix the problem? Well, for doing that, we use the effective theory of inflation, which I will not describe, to identify the simplest possible theories, because it's easy to find a mistake, and for us, it was not easy to fix it. And this is the simplest possible theory. You can think of this theory as a theory for the inflaton, where this pi is the inflaton fluctuation. It's one of the many particular theories. But it has the property that it has the least, it has this kind of interactions, where there's only one cubic interaction here, whose coefficient is proportional to this m here, which is parametrically undisconnected to m Planck, to anything in the problem. This means that you can do loops of these interactions without worrying about loops of graviton or loops of anything else. and there is only one cubic interaction. The cubic interaction is the one which is difficult because it gives rise to the so-called rainbow diagrams. So how do you compute expectation value for the correlation functions? Well, notice that in this theory, this pi is like a scalar field with a standard kinetic term in this interaction, and is related to the curve to perturbation by h pi. So what you do, you compute expectation value or late time or zeta square of t, and you just follow the textbook. You have to insert the interaction picture propagator, Well, the interaction picture operator is the T order of e to the h int, the integral of h interaction. And you compute this quantity. That is, you evolve the scalar of this operator with the free theory and put an interaction picture. By Taylor expanding, you can put other two interaction picture operator here on the left, and put it on the right, you get the real part, or one quartic interaction here on the left, or two triple interaction, a single interaction here and here, which you get that. So there are many ways. This is really the in correlation function. So there are many formulas like retarded forward propagator, but it's very simple even just if you tell or expand and compute. So at this point, you have to compute. Let's just concentrate on one, which is when you insert two cubic interactions on the left. It's really straightforward. That you take, you take the, I should say before that, notice that the counter integral has been rotated in order to pick up the invariant vacuum, the interaction vacuum. So you take the expectation value on the fields, and you Fourier transform, and you take the expectation value. So it's very simple. You get integrals over times, integral over k's, and this expression here that you have to integrate. Now, integrating it is quasi straightforward. You just have to be careful with one thing. That is, this momentum integral here are moving momenta, and they're not physical momenta. So the cutoff you have to impose to regulate these integrals, you have to impose on physical distances. That is, you have to impose that k, the physical momentum, which is k over a of t, is always smaller than a physical cutoff lambda. Notice that here there are two interactions inserted, and they're time ordered. That is, so the commoving cutoff here is time independent. The second subtlety is that notice that these interactions are time ordered, so the T1 interaction happens before the T2. So you have to be careful in choosing what time the cutoff you're putting in. In the sense that because in inflation modes are reshifting from above the UV theory, the cutoff, to below the cutoff, it can be that by the time the interaction one happens, a mode is above the cutoff, and by the time the second interaction happens, a mode is reshifted inside the cutoff. These modes you don't want. You want modes that are present in both the interactions, so this means that the cutoff has to be at time T1, just that. And then T2 doesn't create any problem because this is physical time, and you just do the integral. The result of the integral is slightly different than what you get in Minkowski space. And let's see what is the result of the integral. And for simplicity, we just concentrate on the logarithm running. Now, let's see what would be the result if there was no expansion of the universe and it was just a scale factor equal to 1. The wave function in this mix notation Fourier space via space is this one here. And we're doing interaction with pi cube interaction, pi dot cube interaction, which is highly irrelevant interactions. This means that the result of the one loop calculation will be 1 over k cube, and then a lot of power law divergence, because this is very power law divergence, very relevant interaction. But if you extract enough power of the external momentum, sooner or later you get a logarithmic. In fact, the logarithmic correction goes like this. Now, let's see what happens when we put in the expansion of the universe. Then let's do the expansion of the universe to be very, very slow. That is, we take modes inside the horizon, which are oscillating much faster than the Hubble scale. Then you take the wave function in the Sitter space, and you take the ultraviolet limit, which is this one. The result of the integration is the same as before, with all the only difference is k, the commoving scale factor, has become k over a of eta, which is the scale factor as a function of time, and the same inside the log. That is, commoving momenta here have become just the physical momentum. In fact, this expression here is invariant under the symmetries as we wished. Notice again that the 1 over k cube here is invariant because this is in Fourier space, so there should be a 1 over k cube here to be invariant under this replacement, and the rest should be not invariant. Now, when you do the full calculation, and you go to momenta which are so infrared that they're outside the horizon, then it's very easy to imagine what happens. You take this k over a, and you let it from much bigger than Hubble, it becomes smaller and smaller, and at a certain point crosses Hubble. What happens is that at Hubble, it freezes and gets stuck to Hubble to the 6. So this quantity becomes Hubble to the 6, and the log is again log of Hubble to the over lambda. That is, while in Minkowski space, as you send k, the momentum to 0, the loop correction would go to 0. Here, it stays finite. There is a logarithm running, even in extreme infrared, with this coefficient here. This is, I think, is kind of interesting because it tells us that loop effects in the Sitter space are larger than in Minkowski space. In Minkowski, this would be tiny, and here it is still finite, even in the infrared. This is the analogous thing which happened in the two-point function, where the two-point function for a scalar field goes like 1 over x squared in Minkowski, and this is much smaller than h squared for distances even larger than h to the minus 1, while in the Sitter we get a much bigger result, which is h squared for the two-point function. So the two-point function in the Sitter is much larger than in Minkowski for a given infrared distance, and here is the same. It also tells us that the logarithm running is small if you renormalize the cutoff, the theory, if you renormalize the theory, at a renormalization scale close to Hubble. This makes a lot of sense. It is the analogous thing of what happened in particle physics. Large logs that were found in particle physics were present when you were normalizing the theory at an energy scale which was very different from the normalization scale that you were using for your theory. Here, again, loops are small if you renormalize the cutoff, the theory at an energy scale close to Hubble, which is telling us that inflation is really probing, doing scattering amplitude at energies over the Hubble. Very intuitive result. And in fact, this is the result. So, and this fixes, if you want, the result of Weinberg, which becomes this form, and it's a very intuitive and fine result. So you could do the same calculation in dimensional regularization, and I'll skip it because it doesn't matter too much, but it's possible to do the same in dimensional regularization, and it's important to do it in dimensional regularization because of diff invariance. You want a regulator which doesn't break diff invariance, and also to show where the problem was. And you get exactly the same result, so which is confirms this. There is also another technical point I would like to stress, which is the fact that this divergence is need to be renormalized. You have to find a counter term to subtract the divergences. And if you try to do this with a standard theory of inflation, with a scalar field with some higher degree term, it can get a bit tricky. Because let's imagine that you want to normalize the two-point function. You take from your infra to Lagrange the operator d phi square, and you're looking for terms which have two powers of the fluctuations and one derivative. So you take here, there is this term, perfect. But you take this very high interaction operator, very high derivative interaction operator, but since you can put enough legs on the background, gives a contributes to the two-point function of the fluctuation with these terms. And so this is as good as a possible counterterm as good as this. And clearly, at this point, you have an infinite set of possible counterterms, and you don't know what to choose with. The problem becomes ill-defined. This is because we're doing a really normalization around the non-Lorentz invariant vacuum. So despite Lagrange, this effective theory of Lagrange, instead solves the problems. Because this Lagrange is the Lagrange for the fluctuations. And at a fixed order in fluctuation, quadratic order, and a fixed order in derivatives, you just have three counter possible counter terms. And the problem is well defined. You have three counter terms, you have to solve the problem to absorb the divergences, and these are the counter terms. So this shows how renormalization for the inflaton theory would have been a bit tricky, and this solves the problem. This shows how to renormalize the theory. Now, this was basically just a calculation. It wasn't very intuitively, but I think it was good to show because to see how this thing can be done. But there is a very intuitive way to see how this effect arises. In particular, it is possible to see that loop corrections don't give rise to late time-dependent effect on the curvature perturbation. So I would like to show, in a very intuitive way, why some theories cannot induce a time-dependent on the curvature perturbation zeta. Notice that zeta appears in the metric in the following way, and so a time-dependent on zeta corresponds to a perturbed Hubble rate. Now, let's again compute the expectation values we were doing before. And let's insert between these two zeta square here a unity, which is the interaction evolutor between minus t bar and t. Notice that t bar is some early times, and here I did no counter rotation of the integral, path integral, of the counter integral. Now, when you take the rotation, the counter of integration, you can deformate this counter for this operator to go on the real axis from t to minus t bar on the real axis, and then from minus t bar to minus infinity on the rotated axis. And you can do the same for the other on the right. From this, you get to this. And then you get the following expression, which is I think is pretty intuitively. These two terms here are just, this term here is just the Heisenberg evolution of the operator from minus t bar to t. And this term here is just the projection on the interacting vacuum from minus infinity to minus t bar. That is, the calculation of the one loop correction is just a calculation on the interaction vacuum at the time minus t bar, the expectation value of the evolved operator from minus t bar to t. Now, let's consider the following theories. Let's apply this. So basically, you have to compute the evolution of the operator on the interaction on the vacuum. So let's consider, for simplicity, the following theory, which is the one that's used by Weinberg, where you have a standard inflaton coupled gravitationally with M masses scalar field. Zeta here is the form delta phi over phi dot, and interacts only, and you see that the interactions are just gravitationally mediated. This means that you expect your result to be that the operator zeta will be the integral of the Grease function applied on the stress energy terms of the sigma field. The zeta is a metric fluctuation, is sourced by the stress energy tensor. So there will be the stress energy tensor of the sigma field sources through the Green, sourcing through the Green function, the operator zeta. In fact, if you Taylor expand, if you do the commutator, Taylor expand these terms and reorganize the commutator, you can see, in fact, that the calculation reorganizes itself in this way. When you do the commutators, you have two kinds of diagrams. Either you apply the commutator on the same field twice. This means that evolving perturbatively one operator twice, and the other three, and then you take the correlation function. Or you can evolve linearly each one of the operators and take the correlation function. Now notice that since the retarded Grease function is just the theta function times the commutator, when I will take here the commutator, you see that the structure I was telling you about is beginning to arise. The commutator gives the Green function, and the what remains of the sigma fields is just the stress energy tensor. So the result of the loop integration actually indeed contains this structure here, which is the Grease function applied on the stress energy tensor. Very, very, very simple, I think. Now, these integrals goes all over all the times you can insert the perturbation, which is the stress energy tensor. You can define a time t star, which corresponds to the time at which the modes you're considering crosses the horizon. And the integral, therefore, can come from minus infinity to t star and from t star to t. Now, the integral from minus infinity to t star basically is telling you, give me all the possible interaction perturbation due to the stress energy tensor of the sigma field on zeta, which occurred before zeta crossed the horizon. Whenever you have that, you shut it down at t star, and then you freely evolve zeta from t star to plus infinity, to the final time t. Now, this term here, since we're concentrating on the time dependence, this contribution here cannot give you any time dependence, because the free evolution of zeta makes zeta, from any value it starts, time independent. And this means that this is just the free evolution of zeta with some particularly perturbed initial condition. So no time dependence from here. Instead, this term can give a time dependence. This term is how the continuous perturbation, the continuous fluctuation of the sigma fields, the stress energy of the sigma field, even can back react on the zeta mode even when even when the mode is outside the horizon. This continues to act for all the times, and maybe sources zeta. So let's concentrate on that. And again, there are, there are two kinds of diagrams. One, let's consider the first, the cut in the middle diagrams, which we call SIM. These are the ones where each fluctuation has evolved, has interacted once with the interaction operator. See, as we said, the zeta is sourced by the stress energy tensor fluctuation. And so this term here is just nothing but telling you, I have a fluctuation, a correlation function of the stress energy tensor of the sigma fields. They, of course, by the fact that through this Green function, we source a correlation function of the zeta field. Can this continue to act even when zeta is outside the horizon? In order for continuing to act, now remember that zeta dot is like a delta Hubble. So in order for continuing to act, when zeta, to change zeta in time, you need to change the energy of the energy density, the stress energy density of a region of space as large as the wavelength you are talking about, which is k-physical, which is much larger than Hubble. Now, these sigma fields, however, are all derivative interacting. And so their interaction, their effect, the stress energy tensor becomes irrelevant on scale shorter than longer than Hubble. This means that the correlation between these two points goes rapidly to zero as the distance between two points goes becomes longer than Hubble to the minus one. This means that the fluctuation, the two-point function of the sigma of the stress energy tensor is not able to coherently go together and have a global overdensity and just average out quickly to zero. This means that this term here, this is why this term here don't source zeta outside the horizon. For these terms, zeta is constant. However, there is another effect, a possible effect you have to check, which is the other kind of diagram, which is when you allow two interactions to act on one fluctuation, and the other fluctuation instead evolve freely, and you correct them. What is the physical origin of this diagram? Well, we said that zeta is sourced through a Grease function from the stress energy tensor of the sigma fields. However, if you imagine that you have a long wavelength fluctuation, primordial fluctuation on the metric, the expectation value of the stress energy tensor of the sigma field will depend on the metric, long wavelength metric fluctuation. For example, through the tidal forces, there will be a little tidal force, so they will move a little less, and they will have an expectation value, which will depend on the primordial long wavelength fluctuation. This you can tell or expand, you take the linear part in the primordial fluctuations, and you get a contribution like this, which is proportional to the derivative of the stress energy tensor respect to zeta times zeta itself. And this you can correlate with a free evolved zeta to get a one loop diagram. Basically, this diagram is computing. The stress energy tensor of the sigma fields sources zeta. How its expectation value is perturbed in the presence of a primordial zeta, and then this induces a correlation to one loop between a zeta and another zeta. However, also this diagram doesn't contribute when the zeta mode is outside the horizon. The reason is that because when the primordial mode is outside the horizon, the metric looks in this way, and the zeta mode is constant in time because it's done perturbed one. And this zeta mode is constant in time, and you see that the metric really looks like an unperturbed FRW metric with simply a rescaling of the coordinates. Zeta you can reabsorb inside the definition of X. This means that physically, the sigma field don't see any effect from the zeta fluctuation. They see only the derivatives of the zeta fluctuation, the so-called tidal forces. And this means that the derivative of the expectation value of the stress energy tensor in the presence of the background zeta, if zeta is much longer than the horizon, goes to zero. So also this diagram cannot create a long wavelength zeta fluctuation, cannot source zeta, and therefore also this diagram shuts down. This exhausts all the diagrams and shows that zeta from this interaction cannot be sourced, cannot have a time dependence. And with this, you can even see that the logarithmic divergence will be, again, of the form h over lambda, h over mu, because now that you know that then there is no time dependence, you can really dimensionalize the integrals in dimensional regularization and find that the pole in dimensional regularization has the form log h over mu. There is no other possible dependence. And this tells you that whatever is the running is of the form log h over mu. And in particular, you can even, you could, if you, to get the coefficient, you need to do the calculation. But we've seen, there are also other diagrams that I will skip, like tadpole diagrams, which will induce a time dependence of zeta. This would be true time dependence, but this is a very simple physical effect, which is the fact that the sigma fields change the energy density of the universe, that is, have a sort of cosmological constant-like term. These, you can completely put them away by redefining zeta, the zeta fluctuation, around the correct history and spatial of the universe, which takes account of the vacuum energy of the sigma field. This, you solve the Friedmann-Rumbertson-Volk equation, you define zeta in this way. And in this way, all these diagrams, which will contribute also to the two-point function through these non-1 PI terms, they cancel. So I think this solves the issue of the ultraviolet divergences, shows that there is no additional K dependence, and people are trying to observe to say that maybe this was measurable in the WMAP on the Planck spectrum. But the K dependence, the log, the divergence of the formula H over mu. However, in the last part, we dealt about the possible time dependence of induced by sigma fields on the zeta fluctuations, on the zeta correlation function, which allowed us to show what was the form of the logarithmic divergence. But per se, there were infrared effects. And in fact, if you consider different theories, you get higher divergences. In fact, so far, I've considered only interaction where the fields have a derivative acting on them. And this is basically the reason why their effect was shutting down when they were considering wavelengths longer than the horizon. They were not able to source fluctuation longer than the horizon. However, let's consider the case, let's consider a different mass spectator scalar field with a spectator field with a mass. And let's imagine to see this mass perturbatively. Now, many people have done the calculation and they found that if you do treat this mass perturbativity, you get a logarithmic time dependence, a log of eta, where eta is the conformal time, a time dependence on the correlation function. And this is bad. And it was a nice paper by the people here at Perimeter to resum this kind of divergences. Here I would like to show that a very intuitive way why they are resummable and even how to resum them. So where this effect is coming from? Well, if the particles have a mass, it means that they have a potential energy. And every time a particle comes out of the horizon, it jumps up in the potential. It changes the value of the field in the potential. But this potential has energy, and of course, it changes the energy, so it changes and the source is zeta. In particular, as a mole jumps out of the horizon, it will reach a certain value on the potential. And since you're using perturbative mass, you're doing the calculation with a massless particle. And this means that the sigma field stays constant in time. This means that the field gets stuck there up in the potential and doesn't come down because you said it's massless. And this means that there are regions of order Hubble which are created with an overdensity when the modes cross the horizon, and then they keep expanding with the expansion of the universe, and this overdensity never gets down because you have said that the particle is massless. And so it doesn't come down. However, and this source is zeta because while the expectation value of this jump you are removing by removing the tadpole, there is a variance in these jumps, and this you don't remove with the tadpoles. And this creates a variance in zeta, an effective logarithmic time dependence on this form, which is, this is a linear in time dependence, in normal time dependence, logarithmic conformal time. However, the solution to this problem is pretty obvious. That is the fact that for long times you shouldn't say that the particle is massless. After a long time here, the particle will move down, and the overdensity you get will redshift away. And this corresponds basically either to use the massive propagator, which diagrammatically just means resum all the mass insertion. However, the same applies also for more complicated looking theories, like where you have interaction without a mass, like lambda sigma to the fourth. Because the physics is exactly the same. It doesn't matter it's a mass. If you have a potential which is lambda sigma to the fourth, the particle will still come down the potential. And the overdensity you will create at horizon crossing will reshift away and will not induce any time dependence on the field. In fact, there is a very easy way to resum this effect, because this effect comes all when the modes are outside the horizon. This means that you have to solve, to really use the correct propagator, which is the propagator outside the horizon. This means that you have to solve this differential equation, which is nonlinear. For example, for the lambda sigma to the fourth to the theory, it is this term here. But the leading contribution comes really from taking the expectation, since there are the long wavelength fluctuations which created some non-zero expectation value for the field, you can take the expectation value for two of these guys, and you can get the following the equation. And this is the leading diagram in this limit of the effect of the long fluctuation on the short. And you see that now you have an effective mass because this expectation value here is non-zero. It acts like a mass whose size is the form h, lambda h square times the number of e-foldings the particle has been up in the potential. That is, if you have a massive particle which fluctuates and goes up in the potential, it takes 10 times to come down this potential. And this number of e-folding here is the time at which the particle has been up in the potential and the time it takes to come down. And this is over the h square over m square. That is, you get the mass putting together over the m to the fourth over lambda h to the fourth. And this corresponds to resumming all this diagram. Now, if you use this propagator, which is very intuitive, there is no infrared divergences. So all the infrared divergences are gone for the spectator fields. Now, there is a second kind of infrared divergences, which are a different kind, I think, exhaust all the known, and I think all the ones that they are infrared divergences, which are the one associated to the inflaton itself. Now, let's consider the inflaton itself, an inflationary theory, and for simplicity, like standard Rolle inflation, with a potential like this. Now, when we compute the correlation function of the inflaton, what we're computing? the curvature fluctuations of the inflaton are really on a given wavelength k, on a given number k, are given by the size of the vacuum fluctuation when the mode was crossing the horizon. That is, it is the famous h to the fourth over phi dot square evaluated at the time when the mode k you are considering cross the horizon. In fact, this is really the simple way in which you can get the tilt, because this quantity here, h and phi dot, slightly depends on the time of which the mode crossed the horizon. The horizon crossing time is when the mode k over a at the time of horizon crossing was equal to Hubble at the time of the horizon crossing. So this is the physical way in which this is the size of the curvature fluctuation you get. However, in the inflaton, there are possible infrared issues here, because this k here, these k modes here, are defined. Let's take the inflaton in a box. Let's take a box of inflation and let it expand in time. And each point x, inflation is occurring. And let's take the k mode to be Fourier transform with respect to the x here. Now, basically, the two-point function, as I said, corresponds to the value of this quantity here at the time this mode crosses the horizon. But if, and let's say that the time at which this mode crosses the horizon is here. But if there was a long wavelength fluctuation which occurred before, then the position in which at this time here, when the mode crosses the horizon, the position which you are when you cross the horizon can be a bit upper in the potential or down because there was a fluctuation before. And this changes this value here. In fact, and this can be a very large infrared effect in principle, thanks, because the two-point function coincidence, which amounts the time delay or the time displacement you get in the position on the infrared potential horizon crossing, grows linearly with time, and so it's an effect which scales like the number from the beginning of inflation, which can be huge, 10 to the as big as you want. However, and the physics of this effect is very simple. That is, if you have a long wavelength fluctuation occurring before you, if you have a long wavelength fluctuation occurring, which is at the time of your horizon crossing, way outside the horizon, again, it's very simple to see what is the effect it has, because it's just a redefinition, the background mode is just a redefinition of the spatial coordinates. And this means that the two-point function in the presence of the ground is nothing but the two-point function in the absence of the background at a different scale, which is the scale taking account of just the rescale coordinates here. The presence of the background is just a simple rescaling of the coordinates. And therefore, the two-point function presence of the background has this relationship, which you can tele-expand and extract powers of zeta background and take the expectation value, the typical variance of this zeta background, and you get an effect like this, zeta background times the derivative of the two-point function with respect to zeta background, and the derivative is log k, and you get the following effect, which is the power spectrum of the short modes you are considering, times the square of the tilt, times zeta tilde in the beginning, which is the correlation function coincidence of the fluctuation, which is zeta tilde is 10 to the minus 10, just to get clear, for us, zeta tilde is 10 to the minus 10, but there is addition in n beginning. So this is potentially a very big effect, which was found by Giddings and Slot recently. However, I think this effect, technically this calculation is correct, but this is not a physical observable. So this is one of the infrared logs which come because they are computing something which is not physical. In fact, this is not physical. Why? Because you can say you have a background mode, but if when we observe the modes, suppose we observe the modes which are dictated more or less by the Hubble, h to the minus 1 now, or h to the minus 1 at the heating time. If the zeta mode has a the background mode has a wavelength much longer than the Hubble time, than the scale you can probe, if you are not able to probe the derivatives of this background mode, then background mode doesn't exist. You don't see it if it doesn't exist. So what this means? Again, this means that the way you define the physical wavelength for an observer, the physical wave number, is k over a at the time of your observation, let's say reheating times the additional expansion happened because you have a background mode, which is e to the zeta background, and evaluated at the time of reheating, that is at the end of inflation here. So these are your physical wavelengths. You define the physical wavelengths with respect to the scale factor at your time. This means that when you compute the two-point function at correlation function, when you compute the correlation function to Rosen crossing, you have to find the Rosen crossing time. And instead of using k over the relationship you had for the modes which are really defined as the Fourier transform of this neglecting this of this license that is neglecting the background mode, you instead of using this expression, you have to use, given a k physical, your time is this, you have to multiply this k physical by a to the e to the zeta 3 et and divide by the scale, the effective scale factor at that time, which is a at the time horizon crossing times e to the zeta at the time horizon crossing. And this needs to be equal to h. As you will see, this gives this is a physical effect, and it's a different result from the other one. Because let's massage a bit this expression. The ratio A or T heating over A T horizon crossing is just e to the classical number of e-folding. That is, this is the classical expansion. That is, how many foldings came from when classically the mode crosses the horizon and the time of reheating. You have e to the nc. And this nc, just to get clear, is 60. However, the ratio of this term is non-zero, and it is the expectation value of this quantity, if you take the expectation value, which is 1 plus, and you can tell or expand, if zeta is small, zeta square of x, which is 1 plus this zeta tilde square, which is 10 to the minus 10, times the classical number of e-folding. This is an enhanced expansion. This means that this ratio here, there is an enhanced expansion of quantum origin, which is the fact that when you meet a mode that crosses the horizon, the number of e-folding which incur from when the most crosses the horizon up to horizon crossing is longer than the classical value by this amount, which are close linearly with the classical number of e-folding itself. This is, for people familiar with inflation, this is eternal inflation coming in. This is the raw eternal inflation in the perturbative limit. In a picture, this means that while classically, if you have time horizon crossing and look at a physical wavelength, if you look at how many foldings ago a physical wavelength was crossing the horizon, classically it will be this, but because of the quantum jumps or the quantum correction, there is an effective quantum number of e-foldings which is emitted, which is a bit less, because the expansion is enhanced, and therefore the mode crossed the horizon in a little, when it was missing, a little less number of e-folding than the classical number of e-folding. So this means that there is a correction to the number of e-folding when the mode, to the end of inflation when the mode crossed the horizon, which is of the order this term here, 10 to the minus 10 times nc. This means that when you compute this quantity at horizon crossing, you have to tell or expand this quantity around the classical value, and you get h to the fourth over t phi dot to the square around the classical value. But then there is this correction due to the fact that you didn't come out of the horizon here, but you came out here. And by tell or expanding, you get this effect, which is an infrared divergence. Now that this is different from the one before for two reasons. First, the number of e-folding is the one to the end of inflation, not from the beginning. So this is 60, it's not 10 to the as large as you want. And it's also linear in the tilt, it's not quadratic in the tilt. So this is a physical effect, because it's true that the two-point function is different. It's smaller or larger depending on this quantity here. In principle, measurable, but tiny, because this is 6 and this is 10 to the minus 10 for our universe. So I have almost finished. There are just two issues here, two possible reasons of concern. That is, the first is that when I declared that the mode was coming out from a number of e-fold equal n quantum from to the time of the end of inflation, I took the expectation value. I said, this number is this. But you might wonder that there is a variance, and this variance might also grow with time. However, it's very easy to see that the variance of this quantity is always of the order zeta square, zeta to the one, zeta, which is 10 to the minus 5. It's always small. Note that the expectation value of this quantity and quantum grows linearly with the classical number of e-folding. Instead, the variance is always small. It's always, there is no nc. It's always 10 to the minus 5. The reason for this is the following. We are considering a mode which crossed the horizon more or less at this time here. So this is real space and this is time. There's a mode which crosses the horizon here. And by the time, as inflation goes on, it expands more or less like these triangles. And while the universe is expanding and reaches the reheating time, many, many short wave fluctuations are emitted. They are so many that they have an effect. The duration of inflation here is longer than what would be in the classical value. Because on average, every time you go back, you expand a little more, so there is more time. you have chances to last a little longer. This is just eternal inflation, in fact. And inflation, so the amount of the duration of inflation from the time of horizon crossing to here is longer than the naive classical one. And this scale is important because it's the scale at which you see the modes. This is the physical scale. This is the physical scale at which the mode is projected on the experiment. However, the variance of this number, the variance of the overall expansion, is very small because there are all these fluctuations here are all uncorrelated. There are so many, many. There are e to the n classical independent Hubble patches. They all fluctuate and they average out. So they give an overall effect and no variance. The only variance comes from the mode just after your mode across the horizon. So your mode across the horizon, and there are another one's modes, the next folding, which fluctuate. They are order one, and so they have a variance. If you're lucky and you fluctuate forward, or lucky you fluctuate backward, this gives you an overall. This doesn't average out. There are not many effect guys to compensate this effect. So the first jump gives you an overall time delay, overall expansion, which is exactly what we call zeta. That's why the variance is zeta and doesn't go with the number of folding. It's just a boundary effect here. The second, so the variance is small and then can completely be negligible, or if you want, it doesn't give large infrared effect, instead a loop effect without any IR effects. There is also another reason of concern, and this is my last slide, which is now this delta number quantum of folding, we computed it perturbatively by Taylor expanding zeta. It was the classical number of folding times this zeta to the square, which is 10 to minus 10. However, what happens when zeta, I computed this perturbatively, but what happens when zeta is of order one? This is when you're getting closer to eternal inflation. Can we really compute this quantity here? Here you have to do a fully non-perturbative calculation, which means, again, in this picture, given a mode that crossed the horizon here, given that you start inflation here, how much you expand given all the fluctuation that happen here and have ordered curvature order one? So this is a non-perturbative calculation that for some coincidence I had already done in this paper here. This is a paper I was very proud of, and in 17 months it got 5 citations. So I thought it was very nice and got 5 citations. But in reality it does, without knowing, it resums, it solves exactly this non-perturbative problem. Because in this paper, which is the one which led to the bound on e to the number of the sitter, or the volume is smaller than e to the s the sitter over 2, we actually were able to compute at fully non-perturbative level the expectation value of the volume. That is, if you start with a box, how much is the volume at the end of inflation, which is e to the expectation value of the quantity we are talking about, e to the zeta background, and that's the following expression. That is, it is e to the 3, the classical number of e-folding, times this correction here, where omega is the same omega here which controls eternal inflation. That is, when omega is bigger than 1, you are not in eternal inflation. Is the phase, and which scale parametrically like 1 over zeta squared, that is over the 10 to minus 10 of 1 at the onset of eternal inflation. Now, quite surprisingly, the variance, the expectation value of the volume as the change omega goes from being equal to the classical value to up to correction, which are nc zeta squared, which is what we computed here. And then when zeta becomes over the 1, doesn't go to infinity, but just reach n classic over 2. That is, the maximum, the correction to the number of e-foldings you have once you add eternal inflation, there are all these order one fluctuations within inside your wavelength, don't change too much the history, but they give a parametrically, if you want large, exponentially large effect, that is delta n quantum maximum is nc over 2. And this happens at eternal inflation onset. We also can compute the variance, and the variance we confirm is over the zeta square. And actually, we also have the probability distribution of the volume, which is this expression here. Just it's complicated, doesn't matter, but you can plot it. There is a probability distribution of the volume in all the regions, both far away from eternal inflation to eternal inflation. And this is not just useful now to have a bound on the number of the sitter, but this is actually the resummation of these infrared logs, which are physical and happen for standard solar inflation. So I conclude here by saying that I think we are learning, we learn how to compute quantum correction to inflation observable. I talk about the UV divergences, and the logarithm running is of the form log H over mu. I stress this because sometimes this error keeps being done. So, I mean, it's not log K over mu, but it's log H over mu because of the regularization. This shouldn't be done wrong. Then I also talk about the IR divergences. And I talk about the spectator, and I think they're all the ones unknown so far. The spectator fields, And the solution to the spectator fields to resolve the infrared divergence is then just solve the propagator in a very simple way outside the horizon. For the infrared, instead, there are infrared divergences, which are different, and they are solved by first you need to ask the right question. And even when you ask the right question, you find infrared divergences, but which are just taking account, they just arise from the enhanced quantum expansion, which happens when, between the time you emit a mode, the horizon crossing, and the time reheating. And these have already non-perturbatively solved. So bottom line is that there is no time dependence on the infrared fluctuations. In some cases, after the summation, but we know how to do it. There is no non-trivial scale dependence. This, all the scale dependence comes from this parameter H and phi dot at time horizon crossing. And if we start from the motivation which led us to study this quantity, which is if inflation is predictive and the yes is yes, and if an inflation is true and the answer is yes. Thanks. So for the first comment, I don't agree, but we can discuss. That's good. We are at this conference, exactly. So, I mean, these things you don't observe. If you want to ask a global question, this is the variance of the expectation value of this volume. These global questions are exactly this probability distribution here, so which have been resummed in this way. Yes, and the result is this. Yes. And even though they're not even observable, but yes. And the second question was about, for the gravity waves, okay, we can look at it, but they have the same effect because there is a consistency condition even for gravity waves. So, okay. But that's good because this conference, I'm happy that there are all the people involved, so perfect. No. No, yes, it does, actually. So, yes, this expression which I copied from the paper is for omega less than 1. But the plot is for even inside the terrain inflation. That is, the probability distribution to have a finite volume, even if you have, so first of all, there is this phase transition. So sometimes when omega is less than 1, you strap the box, and sometimes you get infinite volume. Okay, still you can ask, what is the probability distribution? It's a dumb question, but this is the one we are able to answer. You can still ask, what is the probability distribution of the volumes when they are finite? There will be some chances to have a finite volume. And this is the probability distribution whose integral is indeed less than 1. No, nothing, that you can have infinite volume. So this is a very stupid question. Pathology? No, why? Sorry, no, I'd say that there is some probability of... No. In fact, I'm avoiding all the problem on the measure. So this is a very stupid question, but it is very well answered. So is the stupid. So we are able to answer this question, which is not the one when people talk about the measure that I said. Because when people talk about the measure, they say, given that I have an infinite volume realization, what are the various probability between it? So this I'm not able to answer, and not answering. We are just saying that we are able to compute that what is the probability to have infinite volume. This is an overall statement. Do you have infinite volumes? Yes or not? And then when it's finite, what is the probability distribution? So it's not the end of the story. It's not the most interesting of the question. But I think is the first question really answered in a well-controlled way, in a gauge invariant and perturbative way, calculable way. These are pies, everything. Okay. It would be great to do more. No. It's true in the sense. No. Yeah, no, it's true in the sense. not one is easy, but it's true. It's a beautiful fact that we talk about, it's a reflection, but it's a beautiful fact that if you start with a finite box, it becomes infinite. It's true in this sense. You can have infinite volume, which is incredible. I think it's at the level of the black hole evaporation. So it's really a quantum effect that changes asymptotic space-time. This is beautiful. Then there are complicated questions like, what you're asking is like, what is the Sitter entropy for the black hole, the black hole entropy, how we solve it? Okay, I'm not answering, of course, that question. I don't know. I mean, this calculation was not doing that. It was carefully avoiding to enter in this thing. We found something we could compute. We just computed. And we got a bound on the Sitter entropy, so which gravity people are very welcome to use it. That is, we were able to do one calculation. Okay, it's not the one you're talking about, but yes, we do. I think we did what we could.